Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Onji Kumora. Remember, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Coming up on the program, results from Burundi's referendum on constitutional amendments have given the yes vote 73%, which could prolong the rule of President Pierre Nkurunziza until 2034. There's been mixed reactions from ordinary Burundians.
We know that the vote was rigged and the Electoral Commission played a role to ensure that the yes vote wins at the end of the exercise.
I, of course, expected the results to be a win for the yes, and I'm glad that the yes vote has won.
A vaccination campaign to try to stop the Ebola outbreak has begun in the Democratic Republic of Congo, with at least 4,000 doses and much more to come on the way.
We now have cases of Ebola in an urban center, but we're much better placed to deal with this outbreak. I'm pleased to say that vaccination is starting as we speak today.
And that's the good news that was announced by the WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus speaking earlier today. Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But first, here's a chance to listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Syria's army released a statement on Monday declaring the capital Damascus as completely secure from anti-government militants, marking the first time President Bashar al-Assad's army declared key remaining areas free from Islamic State militants since the Syrian civil war began in 2011. Other rebel-held areas near the capital were also declared captured and secure. More than 400,000 people have died in Syria's bloody civil war. In Venezuela, socialist incumbent Nicolas Maduro won the country's presidential election by a landslide, winning with nearly 68% of the vote and beating his nearest challenger, Henry Falcon, by more than 40 points, according to the country's National Election Council. Speaking to thousands of supporters, Maduro hailed his win as a victory against imperialism.
Thank you for overcoming so many attacks and lies. Thanks for joining me in so many combats. And thank you for making me president of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela.
Opponents have called for a rerun of the election, while the United States and the 14-nation Lima group of Latin countries described the vote on Monday as illegitimate. The head of the World Health Organization said Monday that an Ebola vaccination campaign has begun in the Democratic Republic of Congo, only one week after the first confirmed cases became publicly known. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus said more needs to be done, but that the organization is better prepared than it was in 2014, when more than 11,000 people died from the Ebola virus after it spread from Guinea to neighboring Liberia and Sierra Leone. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Around 250 Commonwealth athletes from Africa have applied for asylum in Australia. Immigration officials said the athletes overstayed their visas after taking part in April's Gold Coast Commonwealth Games, but that most of the athletes are now lawfully in the country because they applied for separate visas. The nationalities of the refugees haven't been made public, but refugee advocates said they were helping athletes from Cameroon, Uganda, Rwanda, Ghana, and Sierra Leone. Brazilian authorities said dozens of African migrants from Senegal, Nigeria, Guinea, and Sierra Leone were rescued off its northern coast. Two Brazilians were also rescued from the boat, but were later arrested for human trafficking. Brazil's Navy said it had launched an investigation into the incident. And this just in, 73% of Burundian voters have approved a new constitution, which could allow President Pierre Nkurunziza to seek two more terms and stay in power until 2034. Voter turnout was at 96%, according to the Election Commission. And finally, star Zambian musician Chama Fumba, known as Palato, has been freed on bail ahead of his court date due Friday. He was due in court for holding an illegal protest outside Zambia's parliament last year. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Wanjiku Mwaura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. And of course, welcome our listeners on our Facebook page, like Enoch Deku, who says, I'm following. And Lamin Cham says, hello there. Many thanks for joining us. We begin today's program in Burundi, where the Electoral Commission has announced official results from last week's referendum on constitutional reforms. The results show that 73% of Burundians agreed to amend the constitution, meaning that President Pierre Nkurunziza can remain in power until 2034. Nkurunziza had campaigned forcefully for the constitutional changes that include extending the president's term from 5 years to 7. That could give him also another 14 years in power when his current term expires in the year 2020. He's the latest in a number of African leaders who are changing their country's constitutions or using other means to stay in office. In a moment, we'll be hearing from our own correspondent, Apollinaire Niora in Bujumbura, on the mood in the country. But first, let's listen to the ordinary Burundians, what they have been saying on the results.
We know that the vote was rigged and the Electoral Commission played a role to ensure that the yes vote wins at the end of the exercise. We think that there was cheating. That's why we don't have so much hope in the outcome.
I don't think the Electoral Commission has announced the wrong results. What we know is that the Commission and the people want constitutional reforms.
As someone who followed the electoral proceedings on radio that put the Yes camp ahead, I of course expected the results to be a win for the Yes, and I'm glad that the Yes vote has won.
Those are the voices of ordinary Burundians reacting to official results that have given the yes vote 73%, allowing for constitutional amendments. Now, Apollinaire, where does the result leave opposition groups after it is clear that, you know, the yes vote won at the end of the day?
The opposition chair, Agathon Rwasa, has been saying that the referendum process was not held in a favorable environment. Here he was referring to what was being posted on social media and what also had been reported by local radio stations that worked in a synergy, whereby all those media said the yes had won over the no vote. In this context, Agathon Rwasa explained that the environment was not favorable, saying that his members, the supporters of the opposition coalition, were harassed, were imprisoned, and many of them were beaten. And he also talked about electoral fraud, whereby he said that the counting of votes was not well done, that there was a fabrication indeed as far as the vote counting is concerned. So he said that the vote of the referendum of the constitution has to be redone.
Tell us the general mood in the country.
Now, the general mood here in the country is, I could say that it is tense. Some people are afraid, they are scared. Some of them who were waiting for the provisional results of the referendum have said that I should close my office and go back home because I don't know what is going to happen.
I was speaking to DW's Apollinaire Niora in Bujumbura. And of course, Wanjiku, as you've heard, you know, there have been mixed reactions in Burundi and some people are really scared even to go out, you know. And this, of course, it's a story that we'll keep monitoring and bring to whenever it can.
And I'm just looking at a comment that just came in from Columbus who says, I hope in 2034, this king will not seek another extension.
Keep
even
debate,
other Africans are getting concerned about this extended presidential limits.
Exactly. Keep, you know, the debate going on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And just like I mentioned, it is a story that we'll keep monitoring.
Yes, indeed. And from one election in Africa to another in South America, Nicolas Maduro has won Venezuela's presidential election. He beat his nearest rival, Henry Falcon, by a wide margin. Maduro called his victory a triumph over imperialism, but the opposition boycotted the poll and said it was not a fair vote. More than 1 million people have fled the country in the past 2 years, and hyperinflation has crushed the minimum wage to less than $2 a month. Despite Venezuela having the largest oil reserves in the world, it could face even tougher times ahead. So what's next for Venezuela, and can the country profit from the recent rise in the oil price? This is a question that DW's Gerd Elfers put to Manuel Silva Ferra of the Institute for Latin American Studies at the Free Institute of Berlin.
The answer is because the prices are rising because of the fall of the oil production in Venezuela. And this is part of corruption, instability, and the fail of the oil industry in the country.
Why? Why is the oil industry failing in Venezuela?
Because of the administration. It's a new kind of kleptocracy that come in charge of this industry. At the time, was one of the best and richest industry in the world. And today, in charge of Chavez and then Maduro, so we can see the results of these socialist experiments.
It's not just Maduro who's at fault here, right? I mean, this process started
in 1999. In 1999, when Chavez came in charge, in 2002, Chavez flew 20,000 professionals and technicians of the industry. And that was the very beginning of the situation of today, that we have the fall of the oil production in one of the old and biggest petrostates of the world.
What would Venezuela's economy need right now?
What Venezuela needs is a new regime to get back to democracy. That is the best way to become this country to the new kind of future, yes.
That is Manuel Silva Ferrer of the Institute for Latin American Studies at the Free University of Berlin.
Now, from Latin America back to Africa, in the Democratic Republic of Congo has launched an Ebola vaccination program today to try to stop a new outbreak of the disease. Health workers have shipped 4,000 doses of the vaccine, and more is on its way. The first wave of the program will target the health professionals treating Ebola patients. Also, on the sidelines of this, DRC's president, Joseph Kabila, has agreed to increase funds for the Ebola emergency to $4 million. Here's a report by Sela Oneko.
Vaccination to contain the Ebola outbreak has begun in the Democratic Republic of Congo after dozens of people contracted the disease. The experimental Ebola vaccine is being administered in Bandaka, a northwestern city of 1.2 million people, where the lethal virus has already claimed the life of at least one person. Peter Salama, the World Health Organization's Deputy Director General of Emergency Preparedness and Response, said that his organization is committed to doing more research on epidemics like Ebola.
Part of our response now in all major outbreaks is looking at the research agenda and the agenda for products that may be investigational but have proven to be safe and effective. And that's really the auspices under which we're using the Ebola vaccine, which is also an investigational product but has proven safe and effective.
According to the DRC's health minister, Oli Ilunga, the vaccination campaign will target 600 people, starting with medical staff who have come into contact with suspected cases. Officials are working to prevent the disease from spreading beyond Bandaka, which lies on the Congo River, a busy traffic corridor, as explained by Robert Steffen, chairman of the WHO's Emergency Committee.
The city of Bandaka is in proximity of the Congo River. You can travel on it to Kinshasa and across the border to Congo-Brazzaville. And that, of course, has a significant regional traffic across very porous borders there.
This is the ninth Ebola outbreak in Congo in 4 decades. The last major Ebola outbreak hit the West African countries of Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone in 2014, killing some 11,000 people.
Sela Oneko with that report, and we have to read some of your comments that you've been sending in. Antoinette says, if it works, it is supposed to save lives and would not even know whose. If it sometimes fails, it will be very bad publicity for the MEC, meaning that the industry that, you know, manufactured it.
And Boo Divine says, well, since the Ebola outbreak is already a threat, I think all possible solutions are welcome. But I feel the test vaccine should be used on animals first. Human life has no duplicate.
Many thanks for your comments. And as usual, you can keep on the debate by going to our Facebook page, DW Africa, debate among yourselves. And of course, we can always read your comments whenever we can. Now, in case you're just joining us, you are still listening to DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura. And coming up in the next 15 minutes, do you ever think about the toilet paper you use?
Those toilet papers which have a lot of fibers, when you open it, you see the fibers flowing in the wind. So when you use it, for instance, for the women, it's not hygienic.
Oh, that's not something, you know, really very good. I mean, people manufacturing toilet paper should be careful with other people's lives. Anyway, we will hear more of that report from Uganda. Just stay with us. Don't go anywhere.
Do not move. But first to the Gambia, where the holy month of Ramadan is fueling the spirit of entrepreneurship. Muslims worldwide are observing the month of fasting known as Ramadan. And during this fast, Muslims stay without eating or drinking, not even water, from dawn to sunset. However, one food item that is recommended by Prophet Muhammad for Muslims to break their fast with is dates. And so some of the country's unemployed youths have ventured into selling dates to make a living during this period. Omar Wali reports from Serekunda.
I am in Serekunda Market, one of the biggest in the Gambia. Men, women, young and old are shopping for their evening meal, locally known as ndogu. One thing that most people buy daily to end their fast is dates. Let me walk to one of the shops and talk to a buyer. Hello, Ramadan Mubarak. You buy dates. Why is it so important to you in this holy month of Ramadan?
Thank you very much. Dates are very important in the month of Ramadan because, as the scholars have said, that our beloved Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam used to have dates when he is breaking his fast, water. So for me, I feel it is very important to adhere to the kind of life that he lived, because he is a perfect example for a Muslim. So that is why I always try to endeavor to buy dates and use it while breaking my fast. So I think that is the importance that I particularly attach to the eating of dates in the Ramadan.
This 25-year-old is among the large number of unemployed youths, but Ramadan is an opportunity for him to make some income. He filled a wheelbarrow with dates and puts it till the Serekunda Mosque, where he now stands waiting for customers.
Demba, munge dem tuti.
I started selling dates 2 days ago, and the business is booming. I sold 2 cartons within 2 days. A carton cost about $25, and I normally have $5 profit from each carton. The money I'm making after Ramadan will use to start business because I'm jobless.
Allahumma laka sumtu. So why are dates so important for Muslims? Baba Lee, an imam at Carnivan Estate Mosque, explained to me why Prophet Muhammad chose dates for Muslims to end their fast.
The importance of dates in breaking fast is not only a tradition, but it's a sunnah. Sunnah means the deed or the sunnah of the deeds of the practice of this prophet. And he advised all Muslims to break fast with dates. If it is available, if not, fruit, if not, at least a cup of glass of milk or water. And it has been proven beyond all doubt scientifically that those are very good for somebody being all day without food, without drinking. It has all what needed for the body.
Before the end of the holy month, many unemployed youths will start their own business from the profits they made through selling dates.
That was Omar Wali reporting from Serekunda in the Gambia.
And of course, we asked you how you break your fast in your region, and some of you have been sending, you know, comments how you break the fast. To begin with, Mafe says, we eat mwa mwa and kili kili. I'm sure, Wanjiko, you don't know what that is. Anyway, let me help you out. That's a product of groundnuts mixed with grind corn.
I do know what it is, just with a different name. But we move on with your comments. Salam says, dates are scarce here and very expensive.
And Mustafa Fofana, our usual contributor, says, for us in Sierra Leone, dates are not grown here, but rather imported from Saudi Arabia and other countries where they're grown. We call them tamarind. It is sold on the streets of Freetown, or they are sold on the streets of Freetown, and not all Muslims can afford them.
How do you call dates in your language?
And likewise, we don't grow them. Anyway, keep those comments flowing. And as usual, we'll always read them whenever we can and whenever time allows. We'll be back right after this.
Health check.
And of course, it's the time of the week when we talk about health matters. Now, the paper used to wipe your bottom is one of those household items that doesn't get much attention outside of the bathroom. But the quality of the material matters, because toilet paper can be critical to your health. In Uganda, it is transported, stored, and hawked on the streets in unhygienic conditions. Fake brands are also flooding the market. And according to a survey by the National Bureau of Standards, 70% of the toilet paper on the market is substandard and contains chemicals that are hazardous and can cause cancer. From Kampala, Frank Yeager sent this report.
Heaps of soft tissue are ready for dispatch at the busy factory of global paper product manufacturers. David Matovo, the quality control manager, tells me the products are certified and there is no room for contamination.
Much as it came from my factory, when it is hygienically okay, it can still be contaminated in the market. And this could be as a result of poor storage, poor transportation and handling.
From the manufacturer, the toilet paper is distributed to different outlets. One of them is the crowded market of St. Balikudembe in the capital, Kampala. Here, Babu Chikomeko is selling rolls of toilet paper spread out on the floor. I ask him why his products are not wrapped.
My business is only to sell toilet paper. I'm not concerned about the way it's packed and its hygiene.
Besides the poor handling of the product, the National Bureau of Standards found that most toilet paper in Uganda, both locally made and imported, contains chemicals that cause cervical cancer. Its spokesperson, Barbara Kansime, says
about 70% of the toilet paper is substandard. Some manufacturers are putting a lot of chemicals. Of course, these chemicals are not good for the body. From the surveillance we carried out, 90% of the substandard toilet paper is being imported from China.
At the test laboratory of the Bureau of Standards, Deus Mobangizi says they have set national standards for all products, including toilet paper.
The hygiene product must be able to fit in the hands, must be able to be kept properly so it does not accumulate bacteria, not absorb moisture, because moisture also increases bacteria, and should also not be having any chemicals that are harming the users.
Philomene Masamba, a teacher at Bright Junior School in Kawempe Town, tells me she felt all toilet paper served the same purpose until her skin started reacting to particular brands.
I'm so picky when it comes to toilet tissue. Before finding the right brand, what I used to use previously, it would give me skin rash, and then also I would also experience itching, not until I discover the right brand to use.
At Mulago National Referral Hospital, Dr. Julia Riem says the authorities should take the matter seriously because lives could be at risk.
Those toilet papers, which have a lot of fibers, when you open it, you see the fibers flowing in the wind. So when you use it, for instance, for the women, it's not hygienic. The fibers, whatever is deposited into the cervical ring, eventually it will mutate, it will change shape. Anything which is not meant for the body, it will definitely react. So eventually, in the long run, with that kind of accumulative tissue particles into the ring of the cervix, it will definitely mutate, and eventually it can cause cancer.
The Bureau of Standards says it will continue to monitor the quality of toilet paper in Uganda, and manufacturers, importers, and dealers who fail to comply with rules on standards will face having their businesses shut down.
That was Frank Yeager reporting on the use of toilet paper in Kampala.
And now we move on to sports. The weekend was quite busy in the sports world, with Eintracht Frankfurt beating Bayern Munich to win the German Cup. And it was their first time in 30 years. And Isaac, more than 50,000 fans turned up to welcome them.
Absolutely. It was worth them, you know, receiving them after thumping 3-1. And unsurprisingly, oh, a big shame was that the Bayern Munich players didn't stay on the pitch to at least witness, you know, Frankfurt, you know, take the trophy. That was a big shame for the team, apart from Emmanuel Neuer and another player. But unsurprisingly, Joop Henks also gave a funny reason. You can find that story on our website, dw.com/sports. But away from Germany.
Samson, you're very passionate, I can see, about how they behave themselves.
It was a big shame for them, I mean, as a team like Bayern Munich. The story is on our website, dw.com/sports. But away from Germany, Samson O'Malley in Lagos brings us up to date with what else is happening in the sports world on the African continent. Samson, take it away.
We begin with the international friendly between Nigeria's Super Eagles and Atletico Madrid of Spain. There is now a full house at the training camp of the Super Eagles B to face UEFA Europa League winners Atletico Madrid Tuesday night in Uyo, Akwa Ibom State in southern part of Nigeria, after most of the foreign call-ups joined up today. The team under coach Salisu Yusuf had a full training session at the FIFA Goal Project in Abuja. Ahead of the 2018 FIFA World Cup in Russia, Super Eagles assistant coach Salisu Adamu says Nigeria is not ignorant of the opposition the Super Eagles faces at the World Cup, with the likes of Argentina in the same group. But the coach is confident that the West African football powerhouse could pull up some surprises.
Yeah, we are in a very difficult group playing Iceland. They came first in the European group. Argentina always top at that level. And Croatia, a very good footballing nation. But I think all the four teams have the chance to qualify this quarter.
Lothar Matthäus has been unveiled as an ambassador of Morocco's bid for the 2026 edition of football's showpiece event. Lothar Matthäus, who captained West Germany to victory at the 1990 World Cup in Italy, has expressed his delight in supporting Morocco 2026, promoting what is described as an authentic, inclusive and responsible bid. South African Football Association President and Confederation of African Football Executive Danny Jordan is facing a second sexual assault complaint. Johannesburg-based Sunday Times reported that an unnamed 40-year-old woman filed a complaint with police against a 66-year-old football official. She alleges that Danny Jordan, one of the senior organizers of the 2010 World Cup in South Africa, sexually assaulted her on three occasions. Staying in South Africa, there was an uproar on social media at the weekend after a television host and former Springboks player Ashwin Wilmes walked off set on national television, accusing fellow presenters Nick Marlott and Nas Botha of undermining him. The incident came following the Lions' win over the Brumbies at the Ellis Park in Johannesburg. Wilmes, who won 19 caps for the Springboks, spoke to camera regarding how he was perceived as a quarter player during his professional career and that he refused to be made fun of before walking off set. Wilmes' public walkout has elicited reactions from the country's ruling party, the African National Congress Party. Gwede Matashe is the party's national chairman.
Ashwin Wilmes is a great player of rugby, actually. He played for the Lions, you know. He played very well for the Lions. Now, what you saw yesterday is what I always say, racism is not just a prejudice. It's a stereotype. It is in the subconscious mind of people.
That was a report, you know, by Samson O'Malley in Lagos.
And that and public debate about the racial makeup of sports team in the country that was once divided along racial lines is ongoing, specifically in South African rugby, but also generally in sports.
Okay, that's also a story to monitor. Away from sports, a boat with 25 migrants from Senegal, Nigeria, Guinea, Sierra Leone and Cape Verde, as well as two Brazilians, was rescued by fishermen off the coast. Now, many of you have been reacting to this story, and Ayukuteng says, DW Africa, young people escape their countries because of bad government and dictators. It's sad these dictators like Bia of Cameroon are being sponsored by the West.
And Chandi Madi says, why would any African want to go to Brazil, really, where they have a large black community of their own that they treat like crap? This is what he asks.
Nyamba says, hope on the African continent belongs to government officials and their children. The rest have the option to wait in vain or die early. This is why you see many don't care to take such risks. DW Africa, any idea what type of boat they used? They might have just broken a world record.
Always finding humor in serious news.
Anyway, many thanks for those comments. Keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And on behalf of the production crew behind there, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Onjiko Mwaura.
Bye for now.